Would you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Well, today, this Sunday at Church of the Redeemer, we are doing and have done two things. We are feasting today in honor of St. Mary the Virgin, the mom of Jesus. And this morning at 9:30, we baptized Connor Williams, the son of Jane and Nicholas. I say we because you weren't there in the flesh, most of you, at 9:30, but you were here as a member of the community. This is something that we did together. And all week, so I've been thinking about Mary, I've been thinking about Connor's baptism, those two things together. And I've been thinking about how they belong together, not just because we scheduled it that way, in preacher's license, but because they are both, first of all, so strange and momentous. This morning we saw a young boy take a bath. And that's not, of course, totally unusual, except that it was unusually public. And the waters that he touched were prayed over first so that they would represent, and not only represent, but somehow carry the reality of the death, resurrection, and life of Jesus of Nazareth. This water touched Connor. A cross was traced on his forehead. He was given a watermark that we said could never be washed away. And I wonder how many of us here, how many of you were baptized as a baby or as an infant? I'm just curious how many of us that represents. So a good number of us are really weird, because this is a very strange thing to do to a child. And to bring that into focus, let's think about Mary and what we've just read about her, right? A young woman gave birth. Nothing that odd about that, except that in her particular case, the pregnancy test results were delivered by an angel, and she happened to skip the usual prerequisite of sex, and her zygote slash embryo slash fetus slash child was the Son of the Most High, Luke says, before our reading picks up. That is, the one God's own second self made flesh, which earned Mary, in the course of the tradition, the loaded nickname Theotokos in Greek, the one who carried God uniquely. And as reputations go, that's a fairly hard one to shake or wash away to. Now, there are so many things that we could pause and fasten our attention to this morning. One of them would be just the outsized strangeness of these two things. And I commend that to you in your own reflection, because I do think the strangeness of this comes to instill wonder in us and to stir up faith and hope and love. And it's something like a dare from someone else. But what I want to think about today with you is the coincidence of these two things and something else that they share in common. The feast of St. Mary the Virgin, the baptism of Connor earlier, just at that font that you walked past. Here's what I think is worth taking to heart this morning. It's something hiding in plain sight. Neither Mary nor Connor gets a say. And that is very good news. My suspicion also is that it's deeply uncomfortable for us to hear. And when I say us, I mean we who live in this part of the world at this time in history, in our particular culture. Why? Because in a bunch of ways, from the market, from our myth makers, because of serious traumas. We come to believe that there is nothing that could be more important than choice. Nothing more necessary for our dignity than full autonomy, and nothing safer or better than being in full control at all points. And it's not that those things don't matter. It's that what happens to Mary and what happened to Connor helps us see that those things aren't ultimate goods. They are half-truths in the best sense. They are half-true. But if you rely fully on them, if we define the good life in accordance with them, they become lies that let us down. And the good news, the deeply good news, is something far better. So let's start by thinking about Mary. If you've kept much company with church folk or been through the cycle of the calendar a time or two, I hope that you've heard a sermon or three about the glory of Mary's yes. Right? 9 months before what we read this morning from the Gospel of Luke, before she gives birth in Bethlehem, an angel comes and delivers this out of the blue, out of this world message. And Mary's response after an initially stunned, how in the world would that happen, is to say, as we sung, "Let it be to me according to your word." And Mary's gutsy, simple yes to God, to become God's human partner in redemption, is worth treasuring in your heart as often as you can, which is why we talk about it so often. But only ever talking about that obscures something really important about Mary's story and about the nature of her yes. Because unlike her foremother in Israel, Hannah, unlike Rachel, unlike countless women, Mary didn't get pregnant after praying for it. She wasn't desperate to conceive at this point in her life. The angel did not show up in response to a choice Mary had made, an idea she had hatched for herself to become the mother of God made flesh. That was not her idea. Her yes comes after that is presented to her, after it's spoken over her, in the wake of something else that's been chosen. And what that is spelled out poetically in the psalm that we sang this morning. I wonder if you know this one. It's from this little collection of psalms near the back of the Psalter called the Songs of Ascent. Psalm 132 is one of those. It's part of this little package of pilgrim folk songs that regular old Israelites would sing as they were on their way to Jerusalem for festivals like Passover or Sukkot. And remember that the pilgrims of Israel didn't interrupt their demanding agrarian lives and travel to Jerusalem just for the sake of walking, or just because it was a city like any other, but because it was a city unlike any other. And you hear that come out in the words they sing about the city as they go. Did you hear them this morning? "For the Lord has chosen Zion," they sing. "He has desired her for his habitation." And then we get a quote from God if we go one step further in the psalm. "This is my resting place forever. Here I will reside, for I have desired her." And if you look at the annals of Christian art and poetry and mystical reflection, you'll see that over and over again, as Christians meet those words, those pilgrim song lyrics, they see them reach out and touch Mary. Because Mary is like, or just is, Jerusalem in a person. After what the angel says to her, she becomes God's desired habitation, Her body becomes the literal temple of the Creator God who takes flesh, her flesh, in order to join us in our lives in their fullness, all the way in their miseries and in their glories, and to lift it all and take it all somewhere, to take it into the land of redemption, to give us more than we could ask or imagine. Which is to say, in the words of the psalm, when we are talking about Mary, we must say, the Lord chose her. He desired Mary for his habitation, no one else. And he said about her, this, her flesh, will be my resting place forever. And all of that, what God comes to Mary with, what the angel speaks over her in the future tense, is why we call Mary and only Mary Theotokos. She alone is the God carrier in this way. And it's why we're here this morning. We've all made our little pilgrimage to come here and to make festival, to feast in her name, in her honor, in the company of her and the saints around the table of her son, because of a choice God made. A choice God made to give Mary a gift, and to give something to us all through her. Something too good and too big for her to have asked or imagined ahead of time. And that has everything in the world to do with baptism, and everything in the world to do with each one of us. Some of our fellow Christians practice the very sensible mode of baptism of only baptizing people when they're old enough to ask for it or to choose it. But not most Christians, not now and not across the centuries. Most Christians welcome to the waters of baptism those who are too young to ask or choose or even understand what's happening. That was me. And it looks like that was many of you. And Mary's story, if we see it in all of its facets, helps us see why that is and what light that sheds on what it means to be human at all. Because the truth of the matter is that however important many of our choices turn out to be, the best gifts, the most necessary gifts we all receive do not depend on our choices. No one asked you or me if we wanted to be born or have breath in our lungs or be fed for years, to be loved and held, to be taught how to be a person, how not to be a jerk, how to love, how to choose the good. No one asked us if we wanted to inherit a world where there's so much, endless amounts to explore and to know and to struggle with, to build a story out of as we receive a life that includes having to come to terms with the fact that we die. No one asked us if we wanted to try to write a story of meaning with the days that we're given, however long they are. And all of that is a gift, profoundly. It is the gift upon which every other gift is founded. And just in that way, none of us asked for God to desire to pitch his tent among us as one of us and sweep our lives into the fleshly ark of his own life in the dust with us, beautifully lived and suffered and buried and alive here again with us now and welcoming us to this table. That wasn't your idea. That wasn't my idea. God didn't wait for us to ask. Because that is what life is like. In the fullness of time, says Paul, God sent his son, born of a woman, of this woman, And this morning in the waters of baptism back there, we saw everything that's true of Jesus be given to Connor, wrapped around Connor like a promise, as he was grateful to get splashed once, uncertain about getting splashed a second time, and a little bit upset about being splashed that third time. But even so, God sent the Spirit of his Son, in Paul's words, into Connor's heart, so that God's own voice would rise up from within Connor and from any of us who are baptized to cry, Abba, Father, so that we are no longer enslaved to anyone or anything, and we are rightful children and heirs of God, just the way Jesus was. And that wasn't our idea either. And what I am talking about is the asymmetrical love of God, which does not depend on the wisdom of our choices or on our capacity for adult autonomy or our ability to control anything at all. And we Christians have a word for that: grace. And it is the way that life comes to us, and it is the way that new life comes to us. Now, Mary does say yes. Let it be to me according to your word, she says with whole heart. And this morning, we prayed that Connor would in time follow her lead, that he would say, let it be to me according to the waters of baptism. And every time we baptize someone or confess the creed and renew our vows, or come to this table right here, we have a chance to find our way to our yes again, to the thing that we didn't fully understand when it began to happen to us. And one of the reasons we give thanks and have a wow rise up from within us is this simple truth that is the heart of human life and the heart of Christian life, that our most important yeses are the ones we say to the good things that are simply already given. Thanks be to God.